I do my show on the Heritage Radio Network because I think it's important to talk about the impact of technology on our lives.
I do my show to reach home cooks and help them do better.
Because I love getting together with people in the industry.
I like hosting my show because, to me, it's the stories about people and their relationship to food that help make the food more interesting and more delicious.
Our hosts do their shows as a labor of love, but we still need your financial support in order to keep the lights on and keep the tape rolling. Please become a member today at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. This is a special recording at Treadwell Park, a really great beer bar on the Upper East Side in Manhattan. We've got guests from Brasserie DuPont and Lost Abbey here with Ann Becerra. How are you, Ann?
I'm so happy. Like the happiest I think I've been in a while.
Well, this is cool. We haven't really done a live show before on premise with guests like this. And tell us about this program that you're doing at Treadwell Park.
Yeah, so I think it's just, obviously we're in the Upper East Side. A lot of people that have come in today said, I've never gone above 14th Street, but the space is really good. We have a lot of space and ping pong tables, 20 draft lines, and a really fancy draft system that I'm so excited to play with, the flux capacitor. It's going to be a good time.
And this is great. So you guys brought together Lost Abbey and Brasserie DuPont, and they made a collaboration. So part of the show will be tasting three, maybe four beers from these guys. So let's talk about how you came together. A little bit of introduction. Olivier and Tome, you're a big fan of Belgian-style beers. Why don't you give us some backstory on this project?
So I was contacted by the great people at TBS, which is Total Beverage Solutions. They're the importer for the Saison DuPont beers. And I was asked if we'd be interested in collaborating with Olivier and the brewery on something. And that's one of those once-in-a-lifetime opportunities you certainly don't say no to. So very excited. One of my favorite beers in the world was Saison DuPont. Very inspired by the yeast and the flavor that the beers produce. So I was super excited to meet Olivier in January and just get a chance to experience the brewery and then share that experience through the collaborative beer process.
That's great. And Olivier, what was this process like for you?
Well, first, it's his first time in the States.
It is.
Never been to
the
United States, never been to New York, and he's coming in like a whirlwind, so I know. Go slow with him, be easy.
I was also really interested by this project because we never did a collaboration brew before. It was the first time we did a collaboration brew. And I knew Tommy's experience, and I knew Tommy knows a lot about Saison DuPont. And so it was really interesting to combine the two ideas, the two philosophy of these two breweries. And the idea was to brew a kind of saison, with the saison way to work from Brasserie DuPont, with the yeast DuPont, and the idea was to bring the expertise of Tommy with a selection of specific hops who could match with the saison style.
Cool, so you guys are doing a rollout, you guys are going around New York, yeah. And where else are you going? Yeah.
And so it was really interesting for us.
So we're gonna leave here. We're gonna go to Philadelphia. We're gonna jump on an airplane, head to the West Coast, Los Angeles, San Diego, and then we're gonna finish the trip in San Francisco.
That's great. So Tommy, tell us about for you when you think about yeasts. Saison DuPont. Everyone knows Saison DuPont, I'm sure. And I know that Don and Wendy years ago, and they read Michael Jackson's book, and they kind of saved the saison from Saison DuPont. Mm. Tell us about your experience with Saison DuPont and your interest in yeast and everything.
I think that the yeast that they use in their beers is one of the most distinctive yeasts that you can find in brewing. There's a few signature yeasts that are very characterful, and you just have markers and triggers, and this is one of those yeasts that has a heavy trigger to it. And the thought of being able to actually work with them at the brewery using their yeast was very important, because there's a lot of this type of yeast on the market that claims to be the DuPont yeast, and it produces a lot of flavors that are similar, but to actually go to where it's produced and to use the tanks and to balance that against some of the American hops that we wanted to use was, like I said, a truly once-in-a-lifetime experience, because there's a lot of flavor in that yeast that can only be made at that brewery, and to get it made, you have to go to the brewery.
Olivia, can you talk a little bit about the way that you treat your yeast? I mean, I was fortunate enough to go, and it felt like a little baby, you know, being held. And every step of the way, it was just, you know, so coddled and just so interesting. What is the process, you know, during your fermentation, during your, you know, cooling, everything? Can you just talk a little about that?
We still use the yeast that my grandfather used in the years 50. And it's really important for us to keep the same yeast. And it's, as Tommy said, it's a specific yeast. This yeast gives a lot of phenolic character, a lot of clove in the beer. But it's also a really difficult yeast to manage, because this yeast like warm temperature to be able to work. You cannot multiply the yeast as you want. You need to be very careful and to select each fermentation vessel you use in order to choose the correct fermentation to collect the yeast for the next brew. It's a really special yeast, difficult to manage.
And then Olivia, I can say, okay, so.
Yeah, okay, so.
But what was it like when Tommy came to Belgium? So it was your first collaboration. Yeah. Tell us about, you know, some things you guys did together, experiences you had, part of the brewing process.
For example, for this collaboration brew, we kept the same way to work in the brewing room and the fermentation vessels. But with Tommy coming with a specific selection of hops, this gave us the opportunity to discover different hops, because for our beers, we always use the same five varieties, always. Four varieties for the traditional beers and one for the organic beers we produce. And so we have the habit to work with these varieties. And Tommy brings a lot of totally different hops. And it is good for us to have the opportunity to work, to experiment different smells in our beer, different tastes. And also, Tommy choose up that match really good with our beers.
Yeah. I didn't mean to cut you off, but you just mentioned the organic beers, and I think you guys were one of the original breweries in Belgium to do that, right? How did that
go? We were the first in Belgium to produce organic beers, and we have now a range of six different organic beers. All from the saison style, but also white beer, and also a new beer with peated malt in the beer. Yeah.
Peated malt?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's the next one we're going to try, right? So he's bringing over the rest of the foray. If you guys want to talk about that, I think ours are on the way, but I think everyone has the second beer in front of them by now. Cool. Yeah, if you want to walk through a little bit about the tasting of the foray, the organic?
In this beer, you also find the clove character, but maybe stronger than in the Saison Dupont. That comes also from the malt we use for the foray. We have some precursors for clove in this malt, but the same yeast. We work the same way for the Saison Dupont, for the foray, for the Bonveux. It's always the same ingredients, organic, of course, for the organic production. But always the same way to brew, the same way to ferment. But the yeast works differently due to the different sugar content in the wort. And so the kind of alcohols that are produced by the yeast are different.
It's delicious.
Tom, weigh in a little bit. You know, you brought in some American hops. What hops were you using in the collaboration?
So we've produced a beer at the brewery every year in the Saison style called Carnival. And it's got Simcoe and Amarillo in it. And we've got a set of new hops that are on the market these days that are called Mosaic, and Mosaic's a very interesting, very highly citric, and quite spicy hop in the scheme of things. So we wanted to ship those over, and so those are the three hops that really I think are going to be featured in the Duo Mies. But we also use a little bit of Magnum to bitter, but I thought the process was super exciting, because we sent the hops over in advance of getting to the brewery, but they didn't open the boxes, and it was not until the brew day that we actually opened the boxes and went through and smelled the hops. And my favorite part of the process, which I wasn't able to take part of, I think would have been the next day after the fermentation started. And Olivier can speak to the way that the brewery actually smelled on day one and day two during the fermentation with the esters and the hops producing a citric and just a texture in the aroma and the blow-off of the fermentation, just the way that the brewery smelled. Many, many years that they've been producing the Saison-style beers with those five hops, and we put three new hops into the beer, and the brewery smells completely different. And I think that's just such an interesting experience for this beer.
It's true. And we didn't open the bags before because it was Tommy hops, so we didn't open the bag, and it was...
So respect to them, open his hops up.
And so it was even this day a great experience, because when you take the hop in your hands and you smell, we found new taste, new smells on this day. And so we brought on Friday. We have a drink at the end of the day. And the next day, on Saturday morning, I came to the brewery to control each fermentation vessels. And I didn't think to the special brew we did before. And when I go inside the cellar, the smell was totally different than it has ever been before. A lot of grapefruit in the cellar, citrus aromas. It was a great surprise for me when I went in the cellar.
You look so
amazing.
You look
we want to get these guys
talking about hops. Yeah, it's awesome. That's cool. Besides Lost Abbey, is there any American IPAs that have stood out to you that you thought, you know, wow, that's really something?
I have not a great experience of beer from abroad. I taste every beer I can I can have, but I had some great experience with some saison coming from different countries, but I'm not really a fanatic of IPA. I like bitterness. I like aromatic bitterness, mm-hmm. but not always IPA.
When we get him to San Diego, we'll make sure it'll be fine.
So, Tommy, if you get Olivier to San Diego, what's the, you know, San Diego West Coast IPA 101? What would you school him in?
I think the coolest part about getting to San Diego and the IPA that we will taste, it's just the interesting aromas that are coming out of these new hop varietals. And I think it's exciting to know how much of a baseline they have with these five varieties. But to be experienced with the new couple things that we brought, and then there's so many more hops that, you know, he'll get a chance to see, and just to have your eyes open to the possibilities. I'm not expecting that he's going to go back home in 10 days and order all these new American hops and change every beer that they produce. But at the same time, to think that yeast can do more or have new partners, and just to experience it. But you have to drink it and you have to drink it fresh. And so it'll be exciting to be in San Diego.
You know, DuPont, over the years, we've tried a lot of different beers from you guys. A few years ago, you had the Rodor Pills, which was, to me, new. Has anyone had the Rodor Pills?
That's one of my favorites.
I don't know if you still distribute that here, but that was great. Do you ever think you'll make more of an hoppy kind of IPA Saison hybrid after you've done this project?
Yeah, we could do it before. I'm sure Tommy will be able to convince me to brew this kind of beer. Yes, we'll see. We are open to any new things. We like to keep our standard. Saison Dupont, Moinette Blonde, the Bon Vieux, Red Or Pils, of course, also, because thanks to the Pils, to the Red Or Pils, the brewery could survive in the years 40, 50, because the saison production in our brewery was really declining. And if my grandfather didn't start to brew Pils, the brewery should have to close the doors. And so I have some respect for these pills, and it's why we never stopped to brew the Red Or. And strange, but now since 2 years, we are producing more and more of the Red Or pills. And for the first time, we sell the pills by pallets, because before it was only a few crates, and now it's pallets and pallets. But we are also, of course, open to brew any new things.
You know, and it's fun to do a show talking about one beer. We did a show once about Orval, But really, this is almost going to be the Saison DuPont show.
I'm all right with that.
You know, remember, so at Don and Wendy, how many years ago? 35 years ago.
We started to work with Don and Wendy.
But they almost discontinued Saison. There was a one time when Saison was almost
extinct. They started Saison DuPont only. They started in 1992 or 1993 with Saison DuPont. And thanks to them, Saison DuPont could be known in the U.S. And
is it true they begged you to let them import it? Trust us, let us import it. Americans will love this.
It's my uncle, yes. It was my uncle that was in charge of the brewery before me. And as he sold less and less Saison, he was afraid to start a new market with Saison DuPont. And so his idea was to sell a lot of Moinette Blonde because it was the beer number one of the brewery at this time. And so he was afraid to start with Saison DuPont, and he put some pressure to Don and Wendy to start with Moinette instead of Saison DuPont. And I'm quite happy that they choose the Saison DuPont instead of the Moinette, because personally I drink a lot of Saison, but not a lot of Moinette.
Tommy, tell us when you were starting as a brewer, you know, you're exposed to Belgian-style beers, maybe the first time you had a Saison DuPont or other Belgian beers that inspired you.
So I'm 42. That means I've been drinking for 25 years now. I remember my first Belgian beer. It was Rodenbach. And, after Chimay, of course. But my first really interesting Belgian beer was Rodenbach. And I thought, this is incredible that this is beer, at least, you know, beer being the heritage of the Belgian beers. And, you drink Chimay, you drink Rodenbach, you learn about Saison DuPont, you start to walk through these very classic beers. And mind you, this is 20, 25 years ago, when getting your hands on them was not the easiest thing. But every single one of those beers had a very distinctive signature, and a lot of it was yeast-driven. And, of course, and I've said this before, that the DuPont beers have just a massive signature yeast character. And you think about how that can behave in a beer. So many of our American beers in the past have been very yeastless, and these beers are very yeast-forward and driven by that character. And I think the expressive nature of the yeast is what defines these beers. And I think it's awesome to know that they've had a brewery around for as long as they have, and it's still that same yeast that's in charge of the beer. So for me, it's always been about the flavor that the yeast brings to the beer.
That's great. I mean, do you feel that people are going to go get more interested in Belgian-style beers? I felt like when I started, I was more like you. I wanted to try Belgian beers, and to me, that's what good beer was, or craft beer.
My hope is that because there's Belgian beers being produced all around the world now, the sense of you can put a Belgian yeast or a yeast that came from Belgium in anything and say that it's sort of Belgian-styled is a little bit difficult. I think that there's some amazing beers that people are forgetting about, and the hope is that the classic beers stay classic. Because they are continue to be produced at a very high level. I think that Belgian anything right now that isn't made in Belgium is a little bit challenging. So we always talk about our beers being Belgian-inspired because we're not Belgian and we don't make beer on a farm, near the French border. But what we love is the sense of what the flavor can be, and that flavor for me usually comes from the yeast.
All right, man. Well, cheers, everybody. Let's make a toast because we're here live at Treadwell Park.
Does everybody have the collaboration?
Yeah.
Cool. Yes, this is everyone's official first taste of the collaboration. I didn't cheat. I wanted to have it live. Who wants Tommy?
In fact, Anne wouldn't let me taste it.
I wouldn't let anybody taste it. This is the best. This is the reveal. But Tommy, is there anything you want to like talk about specifics as far as flavors, aromas? If you were walking someone through this beer.
Yeah, it's got that classic sense of where it came from for sure. But I think that the most interesting note in the beer for me is it's got a little bit of a tart edge to it, which there's just enough of an acidity to differentiate it from the first two DuPont beers that came out. And I think some of that's that juiciness from the hops. So that real citrus and some of the grapefruit quality is really shining through. And, you know, you're getting the baseline sense of the yeast in the first two beers, and now it's behaving a little bit differently from the physical yeast of the American hops and some of that. And I like that acidity. I think it's a really interesting note.
Yeah, and if I'm talking to you, maybe what's the possibility of a barrel-aged version of this, perhaps, down the road?
Talking to him?
Talking to you. I'm talking to the barrel guy, whose barrels we don't get because we're in New York.
It's This would be an interesting beer to put some more wild yeast into it and to see. But we've never had a lot of luck with our Carnival in a very similar basis being barrel-aged. So I'm going to drink it this way.
Well, it's perfect like this. Yeah.
We'll take a short break. Back in a few minutes.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Back on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Ann, tell us about Treadwell Park, because we're right here on First Avenue. We're not too far from the Jeffrey.
Yeah.
It's kind of like an undiscovered part of New York City.
Beer destino.
There's not that many beer bars around here, are there?
I know. And, you know, it's nice. It's nice to come. We're all friends with the guys at the Jeffrey, obviously. What I like about it is that they're willing to, you know, to kind of understand good beer. They're excited about it. You know, they're letting us do something like this. We're not open, you know, and we're here because everyone has that same kind of passion and excitement.
Yeah.
And also for the classics. Like, I was going to ask you guys how you feel because, you know, especially now in the age of social media, which we like, don't get me wrong, we're all doing it. We have our hashtags and all that jazz. But I feel like everyone's so excited for the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. That do you think if a Saison DuPont equivalent were to come out now, people would even give it that level of long-term respect? Is that even possible anymore? Or do you think that good is good and that's it? I talked fast. I know. Sorry. That might have been a language thing. But, you know, like, just do you think it's possible to have a beer come out now that would be this good and have this, like, long of a... How do you want to put it? This a longevity such as Saison DuPont. Years and years and years, and people are still saying it's the best beer in the world. Or do you think that everyone's just so excited about the next thing that... Too bad.
I think everything can happen. I don't know.
Tell me, what about you?
Yeah. We live in an age where people want something new every day. And I think that's going to change because I think there's so much crap that's new. And I'm hopeful.
You say that again, Tommy.
There's so much crap that's new. There's so much new that's crap. Either way. I think that classic beers are going to matter. I think they're going to continue to matter, and they've always mattered because they are. They're a baseline. You need to establish what good is. And if you even treat... if you think about what good is in the wine world, or, you know, there's legacy in those things. Every brewery that starts up today wants to be around 50 years from now. And you can't be around 50 years from now if every day of the week you're changing what your beer is. So you have to find that baseline. And what Olivia and I spoke about back in January, and he just said was most interesting to me, was how close they came to not surviving as a brewery. Were it not for the Pilsner carrying the brewery forward, we might not even be exposed to Saison DuPont today because they needed to have something to carry that bridge. But DuPont, the classic, is now the biggest selling beer. And without the Pils, we may not have ever been exposed to the classic, you know, the classic DuPont Saison.
Yes, when I started on the brewery 26 years ago, we were brewing one or two brews of Saison DuPont per year.
Per year.
It was really nothing. And years after years, Saison DuPont became again product number one of the brewery with the biggest growth in the range.
That's great. Well, Ann, just tell us about some of the guests you've invited today. I know there's some industry people here, some
press. Just invited a bunch of people who I thought would appreciate it. You know, we've got people here from Palette Magazine, from Thrillist, from the DeChico Market, from Unibrew, from Sierra Nevada, from the specialty.
DeChico's here, really? Why don't they put their hands
and
up? Come on.
Their mom is listening again.
And they're cousins, right? They're cousins.
Yeah, you know.
There's some amazing people that you know.
Well, I just think everyone has the same understanding of quality and the same kind of level of respect for what makes something really great. And not just the product, but the story. And Tony coming in from Ale Street News, which is great.
Tony Forder. And you got Zach Mack here from Alphabet City Beer and Thrillist.
Yeah. So, you know, I think we're all in this together, and I think we all appreciate the same. And just speaking of us being here in New York, like, is there something, I guess this goes to both of you, to California and to Belgium, about your environment and where you come from and kind of how your environment influences the beers you brew?
I think so, because I come from a small village. We have a small farm brewery, buildings from 1759. It was only a farm before, and it became a farm brewery in 1844. And at this time, the big farms had a lot of people to work on the fields in the summer. And in the winter, they were busy to malt some barley. We still malted barley until 1998. So, 1988, sorry.
Wait, did you guys catch that? That they malted all their own barley until 1998. What happened at 1998?
We had the fire in the kilning, so we decided to stop because we could lose the brewery due to the fire. And so they were brewing a beer during the winter, and that beer was drunk during the summer by the people working on the fields. That means that they were producing a refreshing beer, a dry beer, a refreshing beer with a low alcohol content, no residual sugar at all in the beer, and it is a season style. And so all the range of beer we produce now, it's really inspired by the season style. And so we could not brew Monette, Bonveux, Monkstout, if we had not been inspired by the season style.
Awesome. What about California? We don't get your beers here again. I said it maybe just to kind of hint your way, but...
Someday. I don't think that we could be brewing on two completely more opposite spectrums. Having visited the brewery in Le Pont in January and to see the farmstead and to see the old buildings and just how different that is. I mean, we have a brewery that's been around for 10 years, and it's in a tilt-up building in the middle of an industrial warehouse in San Diego. And to say that our beers are inspired, you know, we take our inspiration from so many different breweries, but these guys take their inspiration from the amount of years that they've been producing as a family and the legacy of the uncle to the cousins and things along the way. The heritage, the pass-off, you know, the family basis of what they do is absolutely Belgian in its makeup, and it's very different than I think than a lot of the industrial brewing that craft brewers in this country sort of represent. I mean, we literally are in a concrete building, and they're in a brick building from 200 years ago. I couldn't imagine them being any more different than that. That being said, the end goal is to make the best beers possible, and I think that is the shared space here.
Sweet.
It's great having you guys on the show. We're at some point, the audience can contribute little cards, and we'll ask some questions. That'll be fun. What does everybody think of this new beer, though? I mean, it's the first time I tried it.
I love it.
I like it.
Again, and everyone save a little bit of all your beers, because we have plenty of cheeses. And I know your wife is the cheesemonger for the area, right? She makes the cheeses. So these beers, so many people I've spoken to said the first aha moment for beer and food pairings was Saison DuPont with XYZ fill-in-the-blank cheese. And I think these are all going to go great with what we have. But the next one that we're bringing on, which I'm so excited, the Posca Rustica, right? So speaking of terroir and the story and where you come from, can you talk a little bit about how you brewed this beer and who you brewed it for and how we have it? Because it's a really cool story.
So Posca Rustica, it's something really special because 3 kilometers from the brewery, we have an old... archaeological site, a Gallo-Roman site. And this site opened its doors 30 years ago. And they asked Brasserie Dupont to produce a special beer, a specific beer for this site. And so, one of my uncle was an historian, and he did a lot of research studies in order to find some ingredients that were used at this time to produce beer. And so for this beer, we work with a combination of malted barley, but also malted wheat. We use a really small quantity of hop because we are obliged to use some hop in order to have to be authorized to sell a beer in Belgium, because to produce a beer you need to use hop. And we replace a great part of the hop by different herbs and different spices that we found in the garden of the brewery, or also that we buy. And so we have 10 different spices and herbs that we use with this beer.
Yeah, and for a while it was only available at that site.
Sorry?
Right? For a while it was only available at that site?
In Belgium it's only available in this site, and we are authorized to sell the beer abroad.
Cool. And now it's in New Jersey, so we had our lovely friends from TBS truck it in from New Jersey so we could have this today, but it's so yummy.
It is really great. You know, it's a nice... did you set up the tasting in terms of the beers that we're tasting today?
Yeah, I figured we'd, you know...
Yeah, it's a great progression. I mean, everyone, this is pretty awesome tasting, isn't it? I think so. This is really great. Hey, Tommy, you know our good friend Steve Hindy in his book. I don't know if anyone has read Steve Hindy's Craft Beer Revolution. Pretty great book, and he covers a lot of the guys, especially from the 90s in the United States craft beer scene. There's a quote from you. I looked it up on the internet on my way over today, but he just said, Tommy Arthur, he was inspired by the new Belgian La Folie, and you talked about some of the Belgian beers that inspired you. I want to dig deeper with you. You know, this is our first time sitting with you. You know, you got a chance to work with the DuPont people. So again, a little more of the Belgian inspirations, things that got you started as a brewer.
You know, I do remember those first times I had some of those Belgian beers, and I Chimay Red was the very first Belgian beer I ever tried, and I remember my first Rodenbach, and I remember my first Saison de Pont, and then working, you know, I had Michael Jackson's book, and, you know, you'd open it, and you'd say, oh, look, there's Rochefort, and there's these, and there's those. But I believe that in order to really appreciate these beers, you have to go to Belgium. There's such a vast difference in the flavors that we get here versus there. And we were speaking to over lunch just how fresh they drink the beer versus it coming here. And it's not to say that it's old when it gets here. It's just very different. I remember being a huge fan of the Rochefort beers, specifically the 8 and the 10, and the quality of the sweetness and the balance in those things. And then I remember the first time I got to go visit the brewery and drink the beers at 6 and 8 weeks old, and how hoppy they were, incredibly hoppy versus what we get over here. And to understand how the beers behave in Belgium and what it means to be a Belgian beer drunk in Belgium in situ, you know, and experience it that way. That's a lot of what I think we see as a craft brewer in this country, is when someone gets a 3 week or 4 week old IPA and the vibrancy of it versus 6 weeks or 8 weeks. You know, you have to appreciate the beer at the source. And I think that's, for me, that's been traveling to Belgium to be a part of this. Any chance I get to go to Brussels and spend time at Cantillon and discuss blending and sour beers, things like that, it's building on that base knowledge.
Hold on for 1 minute. We'll take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're here at Treadwell Park, a live show with Tommy Arthur, Anne Becerra, and Olivier from Brasserie DuPont. So, Tommy, keep going. You were talking about, you know, the difference between making a beer in Belgium and local beers, and keep going, man.
I think it's really important that brewers, you know, you have to get out and experience why things taste the way they do, and you have to. And I think one of the coolest parts about this collaborative process was actually going to their brewery and seeing the things that get talked about: the higher temperature fermentation, the square fermentation vessels, the yeast harvesting, the process, and understanding their methodology versus what you've read or what you've tasted, and really truly sensing it, but experiencing it from that aesthetic to look at it and to understand how it behaves we were there on a day where they had harvested, they had moved beer from one tank to the next, and I was able to just look inside of a vessel, and as a brewer, to see some of the stratification, the way that the yeast sat in the tank previously during the fermentations, and just understanding how markedly different that is from what we see in our world, which is a lot of big tanks, cylinder conical vessels in the square tanks that they have, incredibly different profiles, for sure.
Yeah, one of the questions we got was about the yeast strain, actually. If you'd experimented with different temperatures, and if you got any interesting results.
Difficult for us to experiment different temperature because our yeast decides. And our yeast decides, and she doesn't want to work to low temperature, so we expect it. I know we work at quite high temperature for fermentation, but the only thing we can do is to avoid excessive temperature. I mean, we pitch the wort to 28 degrees Celsius, and the only thing we do is to avoid that the temperature rises too high, because if we leave the vessel so, we can find some beer at 40 degrees Celsius. And the yeast survive. And normally, a classic yeast will die at 26, 28, 29. We pitch at 28, and it could rise to 40, and the yeast is still okay. But we try to avoid.
Yeah, and that was a good question. Who asked that?
Sean did, from Manhattan Beer.
All right, Sean.
Home brewer aficionado extraordinaire.
Cool. You know, one thing we've noticed over the years is, do you feel, Tommy, that, do you think that Belgian breweries have more secrets? Do you think they're open to sharing? Or do you think that's more prevalent in America?
Yeah, you used to have this sense that if you asked a Belgian brewmaster about their beer, they would tell you 90% of what they wanted you to know. But the 10% you wanted to know, they would never tell you, and that was the most important 10%. I think that there's a sharing of information, but some mystique is okay. I mean, we're living in an age where people, at least 10 years ago, were really trying to recreate with high level of fidelity the exact same beer. And so someone would say, this is my Saison DuPont clone, and I know that they use these four hops, and this is the temperature, and this is the yeast. And we've always felt that it's important not to go to that level of fidelity, that it's important to be inspired by something and to work around that. And that's why our Carnival has these American hops in it with some of those same yeast qualities and textures. But we can't make the beer taste the same, so we shouldn't try. So if he doesn't want to tell us what's in 10% of the beer, because that's part of their basis for protecting how classic this beer is, we should respect that. It's, you know, you don't have to give away all your secrets. It's a lot of magic.
And then for you as an American brewer, you've had things like you've won a lot of medals at GABF, World Beer Cup. It's helped put you on the map. Is there anything like that in Europe, or do you feel like you've also done enough of those, and do you still want to keep winning World Beer Cups and GABF medals?
Well, winning never gets old, you know. But the basis for winning is to make the best beer you can, and if you're making the best beers that you can produce, they should compete at a very high level. And that's so for us, you know, we want to be in those competitions to showcase the talented brewers that we have and the flavors we're creating. But our expectation is not to win every time we go out. Our expectation is to make the best beer we can.
Great. And I think you got another question.
Two, actually. For Olivier, your earliest brewing inspiration, where you got your inspiration from aside from your family, and also how many generations or times do you reuse the same batch of yeast?
We have another. For the second question, we can reuse the yeast during 2 years or 3 years. It depends of the quality of the barley malt. So we are able to do 100 to 150 generations if we have high quality barley malt. I mean a lot of nitrogen, azote alpha, amino acids in the barley. But if we have some difficult years for the barley malt quality, we need to do a new generation after 30 batches, 30 multiplications. And the first question was the inspiration.
Yeah, what beers or breweries or people inspired you aside from your family?
Personally, I am a great, great, great fan of Goose. Of a traditional Geuze. So in my personal cellar, I have maybe 200 bottles of Goese.
So nice of you to invite us,
year to,
too.
to 20 years aging. So it's my péché mignon,
Say
in French. If you want some brands, of course, the Cantillon range, but also Girardin, Black Label, Decam, Gueuze, Driefontein. It's my experience, but I do not produce any Gueuze in the brewery. And I am also a fan of stout. I made some trials, 3 months trials in England after my studies. And so it's why I started again with a stout in Brasserie du Pont. My grandfather did a stout, the monk stout, in the year 50. And he stopped to produce this beer, but I was really a fanatic of the old label he had. And so maybe 7 years ago, I decided to start again with the stout, keeping the old label, the old image, but with a new receipt. And so we produce a stout with 5% alcohol. It's more close to an Irish stout, a porter, but we kept the name Monk Stout.
That was a good question. Before we go to the next one, let's ask Tommy, too, for you, you know, what do you have in your cellar? Are there certain things that you're cellaring? Are you also cellaring wine?
No. I drink the wine. I drink the wine. We cellar the beer. I have a library of things that go back to when I first started producing beer 20 years ago. Anything that we've done over the years, we tend to keep at least a case or two of. So the range is pretty exceptional. We don't drink them that often, but we have a large brewery and a giant refrigerator, so we're able to keep a decent amount of beer behind. And someday we'll open them up and have a big party.
That'll be fun.
We have another question from these guys. For Tommy, what do you prefer to actually brew? Like the big core IPAs, the smaller, your sour program, or what's the favorite beer that you've ever personally brewed? Commercial.
I prefer to brew anything not Bock Lager. That's my, I don't like smoked beers that much. So anything around that. We specialize in a large range of beers. We produce some 50 or 60 different beers per year, including all the different barrel age things that we do. So I think my favorite thing to produce is the wide range of beers. These days, we're working with a lot of new hops as part of our new hop concept series, and so IPA is what we love at the brewery to drink. But when we get a chance to cellar some of these beers that we produce that are a little bit more esoteric, very exciting to have those around. But any day of the week that we get to make something that's got our own spin on it or our own basis is a good day. So just not Bock beer.
Anything but Bock. Got it. That makes sense. And then the last thing for you guys, well, not the last, but if both of you had one beer to drink for the rest of your life, and I think 90% of us would say Saison DuPont, but if you had one beer to drink for the rest of your life, what would it be? And if you don't want to choose, you don't have to.
Joker.
Yeah, what is it?
Joker, in Belgium we say.
What's that?
Nothing.
Nothing, okay, got it. Water? You're never going
to
drink
it. Really nothing, Olivia. Olivia, come here. Everybody give a big hand to Olivia, because
I know.
He came on and I'm making fun of him, but his famous quote forever is going to be, okay, so. You're doing a great job talking to us in English. But for real, like, you know, I think
I
you really liked
both.
Hearing about the beers you have in your cellar. Yeah. That was a secret we didn't know, right, Ann? That was something that comes out in these interviews. And we know that Tommy has stuff that he won't tell us that one day there's a party. But what about you, Ann? You know, doing this event, putting this together, you know, are there some beers that you'd like to see coming up in the future? Are you going to do other tastings like this?
Yeah, well, it's just funny what Tommy was saying about going to Belgium. There's something for me, I always use the word in context, and it's just seeing these in context and, you know, going to Belgium and they say, I came back and everyone said, well, what did you get to try that you never had? What was so exciting? And it, you know, a lot of these beers are exported, so there's not a ton that we don't get in New York, but it's the way it's done. It's the, I guess, attention to detail. It's, again, being in the place that it's brewed, being in its proper C2, you know, in C2, like you say, in the art world. But just it's the experience. I think that experience is something that's so crucial. And I think the more bars and restaurants that can provide the whole experience and not just about sitting at the bar and having your beer and drinking it and writing it down. I mean, just enjoying it as part of a larger picture, right? As part of what your friends that you're talking to and the music that's playing and the conversation, I think, is something that Belgium does really, really well. So I'd like to see more of experiential components in bars and restaurants.
That's great. We're going to close out the radio portion. Olivier, Tommy, do you want to say anything before we close out?
It's been awesome to be here. This is the first set of beers on a 9-day road trip for us. So you're blessed because we're not tired, and we're looking forward to more great visits. So thank you for having us.
Thanks, Tommy.
First trip in the States, first day also, and first experience, a great experience. Thank you.
That was great. Ann, thanks for setting this up.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Shout out Treadwell Park, and we're on, 62nd and 1st Avenue in Manhattan.
Yeah, man.
Great place. And thanks to everybody, our engineer, David Tatasciore. First time we're doing kind of a live audience recording of Beer Sessions Radio, and we'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.